Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
What an honor it is to be here on the EIB Network on today, the day the Lord has made as a gift for us. And it's times such as these through which God has decided we will live. The phone number, I'm sure you know it by heart, 800-282-2882. If you want to join us and talk about your long weekend. You saw this tweet from Kamala Harris's account that Memorial Day to her is a picture of her smiling with a filtered background and enjoy your long weekend. And from Joe Biden, and at least Biden spoke some words from a teleprompter about Memorial Day. Biden's tweet, stay cool, everyone, as he licks ice cream. He loves ice cream and he's licking ice cream and looking at a 12-year-old girl. I don't know if he had anything to say about her berets or Brett's in her hair or, you know, that she looks 19 when she crosses her legs, which is another thing Biden recently said. My wife had an observation about both of those tweets. And I think it's like fits into what's going on in the flipping of American society. You have a Democrat Party, which is championing defunding the police, which is championing the idea that all white people are racist to be taught into the heads of school kids. You have a Democrat Party that's for over a year released the felons and locked up the business owners. Why would this not be on purpose? Why would this not be a continuing effort to separate people from the heritage of this country? The heritage in this case being people who gave their lives for this country, who died for their brothers and sisters in this country. We'll talk later in the program about this, but there's a whole generation of people who are confused about whether we should have fought the Nazis. Reminder, the Democrat Party's street soldiers, Black Lives Matter Incorporated and Antifa, two domestic terror groups, teach kids these days that they are fighting literal Nazis when they attempt to murder police officers in Los Angeles and Seattle and Portland. Fighting literal Nazis, but they're confused about should we have fought World War II? So why would this not be on purpose? Why would this not be a continuing effort to decline respect for the military and for respect for what America has done? You know, there's these templates and you can observe them. You know, and I bet we'll hear from military people today. I'd love to have that happen Friday. We heard from a lot of folks from military, understanding that Memorial Day is about the folks who didn't get to come back because they gave their lives. They lost their lives in pursuit of defending American freedom and families and our ability to function as free human beings. So but we'll hear from people on that today as well. But there's these templates. I no longer expose myself to the Mockingbird media except for show prep. So if it's work, I expose myself to it. Other than that, I don't have a TV. I haven't had a TV for going on 19 years. I don't look at the TV. I don't look at the Mockingbird media. So when I do encounter Mockingbird media members for show prep, the patterns just, man, they just stand out. And one of the patterns is this template now that the GOP wants to restrict voting. I saw this in Reuters pieces and AP pieces, and that leaks into local television pieces. And they want to just restrict voting, whereas the Democrats, they just want to be fair and nice and just welcome everybody. But there's no cheating on their side. There's nothing nefarious on their side. And this, of course, related to Texas and Governor Abbott now threatening to defund the state legislature there because the Democrats walked out rather than to vote against a bill that simply puts some regulations around elections. Because a lot of people like me still question the 2020 election because of the rule changes, because of the insanity of five states saying, "Yeah, we're going to take a break at 4:30 in the morning. Oh, look, Biden won." That's weird at 4:30 in the morning. So we'll talk about that in the show and some of Rush's comments on that, of course. There's also this, and we will delve deeply into this with Rush's thoughts, that all of a sudden, the Wuhan virus appears to have come from a lab. All of a sudden. What's so remarkable about this is there was a brilliant documentary of the Epoch Times did months, if that, even I think it was weeks into the Wuhan flu and the lockdowns, etc. And yeah, I'm going to call it the Wuhan flu again, just this week. They did a documentary detailing all of the evidence for this thing having leaked from that lab. The Chinese military, for instance, taking over the lab, etc. The biological reasons that this appears to be human constructed. They went through that. That all of a sudden now, this is no longer a conspiracy theory. They were all over Tom Cotton. If Tom Cotton says it, it can't be true. New York Times writers basically saying, oh yeah, well, the reason we didn't believe it is Republicans said it. The New York Times' Maggie Haberman says it's Trump's fault that she, Maggie Haberman, believed the Chinese Communist Party about the origins of the Wuhan flu. CNN's John Berman asked her, we've come a long way from people dismissing this as conspiracy theory to a lot of people taking this seriously.
I do think it's important to remember that part of the issue when this was first being reported on and discussed back a few months after the pandemic had begun was that then President Trump and Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, both suggested they had seen evidence that this was formed in a lab, and they also suggested it was not released on purpose, but they refused to release the evidence showing what it was. And so because of that, that made this instantly political. I think that it was, you know, example 1000 when the Trump administration learned that when you have burned your own credibility over and over again, people are not immediately going to believe you, especially in an election year. However, that does not mean it's not worth discussing. There has been a sort of persistent, albeit relatively quiet, focus on whether that was the origin of the virus, and it is compounded by the fact that have not been clear answers from Chinese officials about it, and that investigators trying to find out the origin have been stymied. So I do think we're in a different period of this, John, but I also think it's important to remember because I think it's getting reframed in a way that's just not true to what happened. I don't mean here. I mean in this broader debate by Trump supporters about what happened when this was originally raised.
So the Trump people not violating national security and sharing intelligence with the world means that they didn't believe them when you could have believed the Epoch Times, but the New York Times called the Epoch Times documentary misinformation and disinformation. So there's nothing new here for people who've actually tracked the scientific reality of this virus, just like there's nothing new. All of us have known who've been on team reality in regards to the COVID flu that Tony Fauci backed gain of function research. You know, Fox has the story. Fauci said knowledge from controversial pathogen experiments outweigh the risk of possible pandemic. What he means is the gain of function research he wants. Incidentally, Fauci is apparently writing a book about his life philosophy. Well, a lot of people are fans of a short-term con, but my philosophy throughout life has been the longer the grift, the greater the gain. So in my book, I really talk about how to go through the long grift. Because remember, a good con artist, they leave town without getting caught. But a great con artist, they stick around and get to hang out with Hillary Clinton and the like. So it's going to be a great book. The media was all over Tom Cotton when he suggested that the virus came from the Wuhan lab. And the Senate Intelligence Committee, Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton said on Fox and Friends yesterday, he doesn't feel vindicated, just relieved that we're finally getting closer to the truth.
The only sense I have is a sense of relief that we're finally going to try to find the true origins of this virus. And I think all the evidence points towards those labs in Wuhan. And if we find out that's the origins of this virus, then China really needs to pay. They haven't paid enough yet for unleashing this plague on the world. I don't think that China's going to reveal what happened in those labs anytime soon. I think they're going to continue to try to cover it up. And if that's the case, I think it's reasonable for the American people to draw the conclusion that China is covering up an accident in those labs.
I think that's a reasonable conclusion, and I thank the senator for being willing to speak the truth about this. Rush Limbaugh created the phrase CHICOMS for the Chinese Communist Party, and the MAHA was super clear that we're going to need to hold the CCP to account for what they've done.
They let the virus out knowing what it was. They'd seen it. They had seen how it ravaged Wuhan. By the way, have any of you now seen the video that I have referenced two or three times of Xi Jinping walking through the streets of Wuhan, waving up at people in their homes as though he's an elected leader and he's out amongst the people showing that he's just one of them and he's wearing a blue mask? Have you seen it? Because it runs rather frequently. And I'm telling you, you want to talk about propaganda? Xi Jinping is not elected. If you don't support him, you get shot. Even if you are on the CHICOM Politburo, he has amassed more individual power in China than any leader since Mao Zedong. Not an exaggeration. So this guy walking through the streets of Wuhan wearing a blue mask, just as when they reopen the wet market, that's the only sign you need that the virus did not originate there. Had it, they wouldn't reopen those markets where they sell live animals for food. That's what a wet market is. They call it wet because they're still alive. And if there was still any risk, do you think that the leader for life, the supreme, more power than any Chi-Com leader ever since Mao, would go walking through Ground Zero with just a blue mask on his face? If that virus were still active where he was, he'd be in full hazmat suit. He wouldn't even gone out. He wouldn't have gone out in the streets.
So with Rush making that point, and the world now coming to the awareness that in all likelihood this came out of a Chinese lab, how about this? Scott Gottlieb, he's a former head of the Food and Drug Administration, said on Sunday that lab leaks happen all the time while discussing the theory that COVID-19 may have emerged from a Chinese lab in the western city of Wuhan. Gottlieb told fill-in host John Dickerson on CBS Face the Nation the following.
These kinds of lab leaks happen all the time, actually. Even here in the United States, we've had mishaps. And in China, the last six known outbreaks of SARS-1 have been out of labs, including the last known outbreak, which was a pretty extensive outbreak that China initially wouldn't disclose that it came out of a lab.
Maggie Haberman. Those facts are ascertainable for you as well and for the entire Mockingbird media that mocked the whole theory because you wanted to destroy Donald Trump. And you were more than willing to take 40% of small businesses with him and more than willing to see a radical increase in teen suicides, etc. I do hope you're proud. It's Todd Herman in on the EIB Network this week. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network, 800-282-2882. It's always a joy to chat with you. We were talking about Maggie Haberman as a representative of the Mockingbird Media class. Mockingbird Media means that these people repeat and amplify the words of technocrats, statists, and leftists without adding even an ounce of skepticism. They're amplifiers and repeaters. So now that we are this far into Joe Biden being the figurehead above this country behind this militarized installation in Washington, D.C., another act of theater, we can finally talk about the origins of COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, which can lead to COVID-19. That's one. Number two, the stories about Hunter Biden, they're not containable any longer. We have the British press reporting that emails show that, yeah, in fact, Joe Biden did attend meetings. The big guy did show up to help his son grift monies from foreign sources like Ukraine, like Russia, like China. For all keeping track, Joe Biden has decided to make gas more expensive in the United States by shutting down the Keystone pipeline, and decided at the same time to make it more affordable in Russia by dropping our sanctions against their pipeline. This is all beginning now to be uncontainable, but largely from the foreign press. The New York Post does have a piece about the damning evidence that continues to come out of Hunter Biden's laptop. Oh, by the way, that was, in fact, Hunter Biden waving out of Marine One. He's still using it. Last time was 9 days ago, May 22nd, 2021. Can we all recall the panic from the Mockingbird media about the Emoluments Clause? Breaking news tonight out of Washington, D.C. Questions about the constitutionality of President Trump's visitors staying in his hotels. The emoluments clause at risk. Democracy at risk. It was Joe Biden who could push for an actual investigation into the Wuhan lab that Tony Fauci helped fund. He could do that. He won't. He can make noises about it. He won't do that. I hope people are beginning to see the problem. Remember that Time magazine article where they talked about, oh, yeah, we just fortified the election. Yeah, we changed the voting rules. We hid information from the American people. Facebook and Twitter disappeared any Hunter Biden news. Now that it's coming out, right, can we wait any longer till it comes to with these media? Are you guys compromised beyond ideology? There has to be another reason for covering this up. Is it just ideology? Is it really worth it? Is it that Trump hatred? You know, Rush explained another theory. How members of the Mockingbird media are emotionally like socially obsessed 11-year-old kids trying to be popular.
This is what you have to know. Within the drive-by media universe, and let's call it out. It's no mystery. It's the New York Times at the top of the heap. Then the Washington Post. And you throw in USA Today and the LA Times, maybe. I don't know, some of the other big papers. Then you go CNN. Then you'll have ABC, CBS, NBC, PBS. Then you have MSNBC. And you have all the little crumb crunchers following around trying to pick up the refuse. They are terrified of each other. They are scared to death to do anything differently from what they think the leaders of this pack are. So if they are scared to death of the New York Times, they are scared to death of the Washington Post. They do not want to incur the wrath of others in the drive-by media. They are afraid to death to do anything to hurt Biden for fear of being ripped to shreds and ostracized by others in the drive-by media. In other words, folks, they are scared to death. They're going to be scratched off the invite lists. This is not an exaggeration. This is groupthink 101. And the elite status that is conveyed to people in the drive-by media is contingent on them following the lead. There cannot be any independence. There cannot be any risk-taking. There cannot be any curiosity outside the way the group is functioning. There must be total fealty to groupthink, conventional wisdom, what have you.
And I have confirmed this, not that Rush's words need confirmation. I've confirmed this at the local media level. See, I am really obsessed with the COVID flu response because I believe it's the biggest medical scandal in my lifetime. I'm in my 50s. I believe it's the biggest government scandal in my lifetime. I've never seen anything like it, and I hope never to see anything like it again. I watch the World Health Organization disappear the absolute fact of herd immunity. This is, in epidemiology, herd immunity is like gravity to people who function in airplanes. Right, that's you build airplanes. Gravity is a hallmark of what you do. Herd immunity is the same in epidemiology, and it's being disappeared. So I asked a friend of mine who works in television on a local basis, why? You know what he told me? They all buy it. Sure, there's some people who are currying favor with the party. Sure, there's people who hate Republicans. Most of them do. Hated Trump. All of them did, almost to a person. All of them worship government, bureaucrats, far more than politicians. All of them, to a person, buy the notion that a virus with a 99.87% survival rate is a reason to shut down the entire economy. All of them buy the notion that Joe Biden is just a do-gooder. All of them bought the notion that the Hunter Biden piece was disinformation. All of them bought that. So they gladly participated in hiding that information. Now all of them are coming back and saying, well, the information has changed. No, the New York Times is giving you permission to speak. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. I heard a fascinating prayer that really meant a lot to me in my prayer group a few weeks ago. A friend of mine prayed a prayer of thanks for the time of choosing in which we live. I think that's a pretty potent prayer. That's difficult to say, potent prayer. Watching Ron DeSantis, watching Greg Abbott, watching to a great degree Kristi Noem and others, or the lieutenant governor of Idaho, who when the mask-loving, lockdown-loving corporate Republican Brad Little went out of town for a little bit, she issued an executive order banning the mask diktats and the lockdown stuff, and he came back, oh, you're endangering people. It's great to see a time of choosing. And it's great to see some Republicans becoming conservative again. Greg Abbott in Texas decided to do something that has been a long time coming. They have done their Texas Senate Bill 7. And it's simply a method of trying to get elections to a point where they are less likely to be defrauded. That's all. And Democrats are saying, well, people are going to have to stand in line. People stand in line for iPhones. People stand in line for Go-Gurt. Frozen Go-Gurt shops. You ever been to a Texas barbecue joint? A friend of mine in Dallas wanted to take me to a place. It was like a 40-minute wait. I have a rule. I don't stand in line for food, ever. But people stood in line. So, of course, the mockingbirds are attacking this as restrictive voting and trying to restrict voting. And effectively, of course, it's all racism. So Greg Abbott said, hey, I got an idea. We won't pay the state legislature. We'll defund you. If the Democrats continue to walk out and refuse to be involved in the process, okay, you want to take that step, we'll defund you. That means you won't be able to pay your staff. That means you won't have staff to clean up after you. That means you'll have to do your own emails. I love seeing this. I love it. The left has been practicing the defrauding of elections for years. They modeled their mail-in ballot theft in Washington State when the Democrats stole the governor's race from a guy named Dino Rossi. Way back in 2013, the Maha described some of the tactics of their vote scamming.
I literally marvel at the alliance that there is between the Democrat Party and the drive-by media. This is a story in the New York Times. The headline really says it all, but I'll give you some details. Waiting times at ballot box draw scrutiny with studies suggesting that long lines at voting places cost Democrats hundreds of thousands of votes in November. Party leaders are beginning a push to make voting and voter registration easier, setting up a likely new conflict with Republicans over a deeply polarizing issue. So, long lines at your polling place. That's just not fair to Democrats. That is making it harder for Democrats to get votes. Those long lines cost the Democrats hundreds of thousands of votes. Oh, yeah, the long lines are all Democrat voters. There aren't any Republicans in there. The people really, really desirous to vote, the people that show up and wait in line a long time, obviously they're voting for Democrats. Nobody would do that to vote for a Republican. If there were long lines for Republicans to vote, the New York Times would have a story on how we can make the lines longer. Now, this article is motivated by three things. First, and this is the key, and remember it's the New York Times, so there's always an agenda behind this stuff. This is not news. The biggest thing anybody can learn, stories in the New York Times today are not news. They are related to the achievement of the next phase of the Obama agenda. Every story, for the most part, particularly domestic political stories, are nothing more than telltale indicators of what it is Obama wants next. So what is this all about? Well, you have come to the right place. This article is motivated by three things. First, the Supreme Court is about to rule on the Voting Rights Act. So the New York Times is leaning on them. The New York Times knows that the justices of the Supreme Court value the opinion of reporters and editors at the New York Times. And so the Times is getting its marker down on what it wants the court to do in relationship to this Voting Rights Act case. And without getting into specifics, what they want the justices to do is find it possible, make it possible for more Democrats to vote, make it easier for more Democrats to vote. Notice there's nothing here about Republicans being in these long lines. The whole premise of the story, long lines equal long waits equals people leaving the line and going home and not voting, which equals lost votes for the Democrats, which equals we can't have that. And so the Voting Rights Act case, without getting into specifics of it, the New York Times is putting down a marker for the justices so that they can keep in mind what's really important about the Voting Rights Act, and that is to do whatever is necessary in their ruling to make it possible for fraud to continue, to make it possible for registration and voting maybe on the same day, same place, to take place, to happen, but whatever is necessary to facilitate Democrats winning elections. The second thing involved in this story, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat, New York, is sponsoring a Senate voting bill at the behest of Obama, which will address the problems of access to voting. Kirsten Gillibrand has determined somehow that many Democrats are finding it more difficult than ever to vote. So she has a piece of legislation to make it easier for them to vote. Well, but there is an access problem. Otherwise, there wouldn't be long lines, don't you see? Plus, the Republicans keep making noise about photo ID, and we need to settle that once and for all. And we need to settle that in the Voting Rights Act. We need to make sure there never, ever going to be anything like a photo ID requirement. Never, ever going to make sure there's a federal photo ID requirement to vote. Lastly, this is all part of the Democrats' push to allow more ballot stuffing by extending Election Day for weeks and doing away with the voter ID requirement in general. And if Congress will not do these things, then Obama will have to bypass Congress and do away with these restrictions by executive order. Now, in this story, the New York Times cites a professor who says, quote, voting is one of the most sacred rights you have. They should make it as painless as possible. Implying that it's really painful now to vote. It's really hard. It's too hard. The Republicans are out there demanding everybody have a picture. The Republicans are demanding that everybody who vote actually be a citizen. The Republicans are demanding that everybody who vote actually be registered. It's too hard. And it's undemocratic. And the justices have got to sweep all these restrictions away. Now, what does voter registration have to do with long lines to vote? Voter registration doesn't have anything to do with Election Day. But it will. Because if they get their way, you're going to be able to do both. On the spot. On the spot registration. You register, then you go vote. Same thing, same time. Yep, that's the next phase.
February 5. 2013. Rush Hudson Limbaugh III just described what they did. Now, everybody understand why he's the Maha? I mentioned the long lines. People will stand in lines to buy iPhones, but not to vote. They have to show photo ID to buy iPhones. You know? And think of that when your Cilla bill arrives this week. It'll be larger than $30 maybe. That's how much Pure Talk's monthly rate is for unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data. And by the way, if you go over your usage data, Pure Talk doesn't charge you more. Some families are saving as much as $800 a year. Rush spells it all out.
Hey, folks, you know, you can spend all kinds of time deliberating what kind of cell phone you want to own, what kind of cell phone you want to use, but you might spend 10% of that time deciding on your cell phone carrier, if that much. Now, maybe you spend more than 10%, but Really, there are options out there you may not know about. Cell phone service has become expensive. You know, I remember back in the days of flip phones.
This is before 2007, before the iPhone was invented. The theory was that your service was going to be given to you as long as you paid for the phone. That's the way the experts thought the trend line was, that service is going to be pretty much free, but you got to pay for the phone. Now that's turned upside down. Now the phone costs a pretty penny, as does service. Cell phone service has become expensive. The big brand name carriers charge a lot because, well, they can. So there's another company out there that we want to suggest you look into called Pure Talk, because their focus is on providing you the best cell phone coverage and service for about half the price of the big brand names in cellular service. Pure Talk gives you excellent coverage. It uses the same cell towers as one of the biggest brands. You get unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data for about $30 a month. It's on the same tower that you're probably using now, same towers. And if you go over on your data usage, Pure Talk is not going to charge you for it. Switch to Pure Talk. Keep your phone number just as it is. Pure Talk will help you make that an easy switch. From your cell phone, just dial #250 and then say Pure Talk. #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That is #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. Something to look into.
It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It is always an incredible honor to join you. I just saw the graphics. What appear to be the graphics for the book that Tony Fauci somehow found time to write. It's called Expect the Unexpected. This is the Fauci who said, oh, there's no doubt that Donald Trump's going to face a surprise pandemic. And this is Tony Fauci who has said, well, I mean, it's worth the cost of gain of function research. We might have a pandemic from that. It might escape, but it's worth it. Expect the unexpected. One day, well, masks are largely a placebo for weak-minded people. The next day, masks are literally the only thing that saves the human race. That's why we exist. So expect the unexpected. I'm thinking of writing an answer to this like expect Fauciisms, or how about Fauciism? As opposed to fascism. Let's talk to James in Connecticut. James, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Welcome, James.
Hey, good afternoon, Todd. I just want to say thank you for an informative show. What I want to comment on is the fact of the COVID virus coming out of a lab. It was about a year and a half ago, in April of 2020, when Britain had a COBRA meeting. Now, I feel that I've discounted intelligence from the U.S. I think that Obama and the liberals have decimated our intelligence. I rely more on MI6 out of Britain and the Mossad out of Israel. Back in this COBRA meeting, which is a cabinet office briefing room, which happened in April of 2020, it leaked out that British intelligence came out with the fact that in the lab, the people were using level 2 protective gear, where they should have been using level 4 protective gear, and that the virus splattered on one person there, and that person walked out of the lab with the virus on him into the wet market, and that's what supposedly started it, according to MI6.
Well, look, this is the most simple explanation. And it makes the most sense. And we've been required to believe or asked to believe throughout this whole year that the proximity to the Wuhan lab, where they're working with SARS viruses, when what was it? Scott Gottlieb said the previous four viruses, SARS-1 viruses, escaped from labs. That we're asked to believe that it was a bat that someone didn't fully cook that led to this. Then we had the Epoch Times documentary where they quoted what you were just talking about, James. They quoted MI6 in that, where they talked about an employee getting sick. They talked about the Chinese military coming and taking over the lab. There were well-intended Chinese scientists risking their lives to communicate with the world, saying, hey, we're concerned about this pathogen. Here's the genetic code of the pathogen. That has since been disappeared. That version, the first versions of here's the genetic code, apparently the Chinese military, having taken over the lab, came and disappeared that stuff. So what's so remarkable about this is just like the Hope Simpson theory, that is that viruses get worse during the winter, less worse during the summer, just like the knowledge that masks are incapable of stopping the transmission of upper respiratory viruses, just like the death rate being 99.87%, just like all these things, all these facts have been ascertainable for well over a year. But the wall of silence from the mockingbird, well, it's not silence, the wall of amplification of Tony the Fauci. Hey, today up is down, but tomorrow up is going to be sideways. It's a fun game called Everybody Follow the Fauci. It's remarkable. Remember that Rush's wisdom, all of it, is continually available at rushlimbaugh.com. Rush 24/7 available there. More to follow as the program unfolds. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Just remarkable to watch and to realize that, as we've been told, Tony Fauci is the busiest man in all of Washington, D.C., just absolutely focused on the COVID flu, that he has had time to write a book. I would just like everybody to reflect upon what would happen, what did happen, when President Trump occasionally went to a golf course, or often went to a golf course. I want everyone to reflect upon what Fauci's writing about. He's writing about his life's philosophy. Now, remember, this is a man who told us, well, I'm not responsible for running the economy. I don't make decisions like that. That's not what I, and then he did. And we're told that this man is a selfless public servant, but he needs us now to understand his life's philosophy. You think this will extend beyond medicine? There is in Washington, D.C., and we're going to talk about this next hour with a great, great commentary from Rush. There is in Washington, D.C., this unavoidable magnetic pull into egotism and narcissism. And so many people cannot avoid it. And Fauci's been a creature of that place for years. I happen to believe he actually added to the magnetic pole of narcissism. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's such an honor to be with you. It always is on this program, especially in these days, times such as these. Every day a gift God has made for us. I do find myself grateful for this in this time of choosing. There is a piece in Breitbart that goes into the details of something that is, it's not unique to D.C., but it's uniquely harmful to D.C., and this is the insider's insider game. And this is a piece by Alexander Marlowe. According to NBC News and other sources, President Joe Biden's expected to appoint Tom Nides, ambassador to Israel. Nides' wife, Virginia Moseley, is senior vice president of news gathering at CNN. And the piece continues to make the comparison between the power brokers and the media and big business and Joe Biden. And this is endemic to D.C., and we kid ourselves if we say it's not. There were those of us who did not see Donald Trump's true, true decision to not be bought. And then we saw it forefront. And it was the reason, in my judgment, that the swamp had to do everything they could to cancel the election, including, in my judgment, amping up to a ridiculous, non-scientifically robust, nonsense-level response to COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2, including all the things in the Time magazine article where they talked about, oh, we hid information from the American people, including all the things we're aware of. Certainly, Trump had people that he appointed to positions, as you know, one of the Jets executive got to be an ambassador, and certainly that game got played a little bit, but not like this, not like what Biden is doing. Biden's kid, Hunter Biden, selling this inside access. This is now confirmed. Biden went to these meetings. It is one thing to talk about the incestuous way of D.C. It's another thing to see it We'll get to Rush's commentary on this because Rush lays it bare. It's another thing to have maybe some ideas because you've worked in that mess of the swamp, albeit I just worked for the RNC. I didn't work on the Hill, but I had friends who worked on the Hill, and I had enemies who worked on the Hill. Here's an idea. All emails between federal office holders and anyone else is our property, belongs to us. If it's work-related, it's ours. If they use anything other than their official email accounts for anything work-related and we find out, it's a felony punishable by 15 years in prison. Their emails automatically uploaded to the cloud. Their phone calls automatically uploaded to the cloud. Anybody in journalism, anybody not in journalism can listen to those. If it's national security related, great. You say so in advance. You ask in advance for it not to be provided us. There is no other dynamic on earth where the bosses don't get to observe the actions of the employees. You don't want to see influence bot like Biden receiving funds from a Russian lobbyist before he conceded on this pipeline. This comes from the Washington Examiner. Now, the DNC says, oh, yeah, I know we gave that money back. Okay, well, that's the money we know about. You didn't give the money back from Hunter Biden. You didn't get that back. That's in Hunter's pockets. It's in the big guy's pockets. It's in the multiple houses. It's in his grandkids' account. Last time I was on for on EIB with you, we talked about one of the Democrat power brokers giving money to Biden's grandkids, $100,000. That was one of the former heads of the FBI gave $100,000 to Biden's grandkids. Well, of course, but we know it was to Biden. You see, there are godly morals. There are atheistic morals. There's atheist people who are great moral people. There's legalistic morals, and then there's DC. And it is power brokers being with power brokers become comfortable with power brokers. That's what Trump broke. Yes, he appointed some people to some positions. Yes, his kids worked in the administration. No, he did not sell America out to China. He did not sell us out to the International Monetary Fund, etc. He didn't do that. And that was the panic. And it's so remarkable that it took someone telling Donald Trump that 3 million Americans were going to die for him to allow the swamp to get a foothold. And look what we held. Well, look what happened with Fauci. So Rush often talked about the incestuous nature of Washington, D.C., and how those in power reward themselves. We've talked about this. I made the example of the New York Jets, that one of the Jets executives got to be an ambassador under the U.K. under the Trump administration. Now we've got Biden putting Tom Nides into the ambassador slot in Israel, likely, though this isn't officially confirmed, L.A.'s so-called mayor Eric Garcetti taking the ambassador to India slot. Garcetti was the chairman of Biden's election campaign.
Let's talk about all the conflicts of interest that exist just in Washington, D.C. And all the conflicts of interest that exist that you haven't been told about. They are many, and we're going to review some of them, because many of them you probably don't know. How often does ABC News divulge that George Stephanopoulos was a member of the Bill Clinton war room, among other things, designed to destroy any woman who came forward alleging that Clinton had an affair with her, some kind of sexual dalliance, working with James Carville? I mean, the guy never went to journalism school. He's not a journalist. He's a political activist and consultant disguised as a journalist. How often does ABC disclose it? F. Chuck Todd. F. Chuck Todd's wife is a Democrat activist. He's the host of Meet the Press, NBC head honcho. She makes lots of money working on the Bernie Sanders campaign. Jake Tapper, back then, his wife was a regional field manager for Planned Parenthood, in addition to Jake's anti-gun activism. CNN regularly reports on Senator Cory Booker. You know that Jeff Zucker, who runs CNN, has a 14-year-old son, was awarded stock options potentially worth millions from Cory Booker, a United States senator. Claire Shipman, senior correspondent at ABC News, married to Jay Carney, Obama's White House press secretary, Biden's before that. Virginia Moseley, CNN vice president, Washington bureau chief, married to Tom Nides, deputy secretary of state under Barack Hussein O. More than 30 so-called journalists left their profession to go to work in the Obama administration or on one of his presidential campaigns, according to the Media Research Center. That's Brett Bozell's invaluable group. CBS News President David Rhodes is the brother of Ben Rhodes. Name is spelled R-H-O-D-E-S. Ben Rhodes was a top foreign policy advisor to Barack Hussein O, while his brother is the president of CBS News. Ben Rhodes, the brother of the president of CBS News, was the man behind the Benghazi cover-up and the disastrous Iran nuke deal. And it was Ben Rhodes who often bragged about how easy it was to mislead people, including the media, into believing the Iran deal was something that it wasn't. Well, how hard would it be to deceive the news media when your own brother runs CBS News? Martha Raddatz is an info babe at ABC News. She often serves as a moderator for presidential debates. She did moderate a Trump debate. I don't recall if it was during the primaries or during the presidential campaign, but she went toe-to-toe with Trump. She fashions herself a foreign policy expert. She's a journalist, but she's tight with the State Department and foreign policy specialists because it's incestuous. They all have the same agenda, the same goals where the United States and the world and global government is concerned. And I remember Martha Raddatz just giving Trump all kinds of hell based on the fact that in her mind he was stupid and naive and ignorant, didn't know what he was talking about. Because he was criticizing the Obama administration for announcing days in advance military operations. And Martha Raddatz could not believe that Trump would dare criticize the great Obama. And so Martha Raddatz is sitting there, well, you don't understand the way certain things work, Mr. Trump. Maybe they were psychological ops. Maybe Obama was trying to scare people. As Victor Davis Hanson writes, imagine, what if both ABC News and CBS News were now running mostly favorable news accounts about Trump's administration rather than the 90% negative coverage? And imagine that one of Donald Trump's chief advisors and deputy national security advisor was the brother of the current CBS News president, while the sister of the ABC News president was another one of Trump's top national security energy advisors. What would the media say of such apparent incestuousness that involved two-thirds of the network's nightly newscasts? If ABC and CBS were both favorably disposed toward Trump and both had family members or spouses, both working in the news network and the Trump administration, what would the drive-by say about it? They'd be blowing a gasket. But it's exactly what happened during the Obama administration, and nobody said a word.
So let's underline what Rush just said. Number one, have a good long weekend. Kamala Harris. Her account tweeted that with a nice picture of Kamala Harris. For Memorial Day, do you remember when the president said something that the media didn't like about Memorial Day? President Trump, the absolute fantastical head blowings off in the media. Another, Rush said they all have the same view. This closed circle, this incestuous circle, all have the same view about global governance, what Rush is talking about. What are the people who run Biden proposing now? A global minimum tax rate. Which, number one, does away with our competitive advantage if we're going to be a small government, big person, free market-oriented society. But corporations don't pay taxes. The 15% is a global minimum income tax filtered through the same entities who are lining up to force COVID passports and so-called social justice and loose voting rules in the United States. So the incestuous circle has invited some other people in now. Some of these Fortune 500 CEOs. They just want to be last on the table of the Marxists eating one another. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. And just a reminder that if you haven't heard this, it's remarkable storytelling. We talked about this podcast series by our own Bo Snerdly, whose real name is James Golden. And the storytelling, it's just really remarkable. And it's about Rush. It's a series is called Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the Golden EIB network. And Bo takes you behind the scenes for, when we say intimate, I mean, the guy was with him nearly three decades doing the show in the way that changed America as we know it. MyPillow and Tunnel to Towers Foundation are the sponsors of this podcast. You can find it at rushlimbaugh.com. You can find it where you get your podcasts. And if you've been a fan of Rush for these decades, it is something you really do not want to miss. You must experience it. Let's talk to Brian in Greensboro, North Carolina. Brian, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Welcome.
Hey, Todd. I hope you don't lose me here. I'm in a bad section of town. My cell phone might go out. But I wanted to talk about what the
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy because you said I might lose you. Can we put Brian on hold and have him get out of mobile phone Ghettoville? Let's do that. If we can put him on hold, let's talk to Lori instead in Ohio. Lori, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Welcome, Lori.
Hi. Thanks, Todd. And thanks for everyone there on the crew, all that you do. I would like to suggest that we think big picture. I mean, it was obvious to me that, of course, the virus came out of the lab. That was a little too convenient in locale there. But how was the virus distributed? Never has anything gone global, ever, the way this thing has. It went fast.
Yeah, there is a whole bunch of sleight of hand involved in this, Lori, and I understand why you're asking the question the way you're asking it, and I respect what you're asking. So let's unpack this a bit. When China started to talk about the virus, you had Taiwan say, which is, by the way, a country. Hey, China, Taiwan's a country. I'm not going to apologize. Like, what's his name? John Cena, the tough wrestler who, I said Taiwan's a country. It's a country. They shut down travel immediately from China because the president of Taiwan said she didn't trust the Chinese government, right? That's a neighbor. And clearly Taiwan, why would they trust China? But here's the thing, Lori. As we've done now analysis of things like, believe it or not, sewer water, we've learned that the virus was circulating a long time before when we were told. In fact, the virus may have been in circulation late 2018, very early 2019. The sleight of hand on this is twofold. One, I believe it did come out of the Chinese lab and that they hid that fact. Number two is the length of time it's been around the globe. And what that means is that the death rate is even lower than what we've been told. That this is really very much very similar to a flu. So my question is, did China decide, hey, this is a great opportunity to panic the world? They're in the who's in their pocket. Is this a great time to knock the economy, the United States askew? Because China didn't keep their economy locked down, right? Is this a time to reset the global economy in our favor? It's the Democrats who said never let a good crisis go to waste. Specific to your question, though, during the time when China started to talk about the virus, they shut down flights from Wuhan to other parts of China, but not around the world. They kept the flights going to New York and London, etc. So that would be one way that the virus has spread, but it's been around a lot longer than we've been told. I appreciate the phone call, Lori. Thanks for the kind word to Team EIB. They do appreciate it, and I do too. Brian in Greensboro, North Carolina. Let's try this one more time. Hope you're in a better area. Welcome back, Brian. Second try.
Hey, thank you. Sorry about that. Hey, listen, just wanted to kind of make another point about the global tax rate. One actually is a request that you maybe explain this a little bit more when you say that, it's basically hurting our competitiveness there. But I don't think people understand, you know, they promote the global tax rate as this fair tax rate. Okay. Now forget the fact that, okay, corporations don't pay taxes. I think any conservative out there understands that, but I think you need to explain that to other people who aren't as smart. Secondly, this is not a fair global tax rate. What this is an attempt to punish the countries like Ireland, like Bermuda, like the Cayman Islands, who either charge a really tiny corporate tax rate or don't charge any tax rates at all on corporations because they understand, okay, when you charge a corporation taxes, what you're really doing is you're upping their price. Because every company in the world makes a profit margin. They have a goal for, I need to make X amount of money that I can keep, not give to the government, not pay out as expenses, not pay out as, you know, a salary, whatever, but that they themselves can keep to further their business. So, of course, businesses will then say, well, wait a second, I was paying 15% before or whatever the number was. Now I'm paying 28% or whatever the new number is going to be. All right, I need to adjust my prices. Who pays for that?
Right, the customer. Right.
But,
so go ahead.
No, no, I was just going to say, you know, this there's nothing fair about this. What this is the big countries stomping their feet, whining and complaining. You're taking my jobs. You're taking not my jobs. They don't care about the jobs. They care. You're taking my tax money. That's what they care about. That's why they're so mad at Ireland. Ireland and Bermuda and so on. Those are countries who are sitting there going, wait a second. I will be glad to charge you zero if you're going to employ my people. If you're going to employ my people, that means by default, I'm going to get taxes because I get income tax from those people. And those people can then go out in town and buy stuff.
Exactly. That's the economic activity. So you said I should explain a couple things. Number one, you just did a great job of explaining how corporations don't pay taxes. So we don't need to explain that further. Here's what I mean. When the United States functions as a constitutional republic with constitutionally provisioned limits on what government can do to people and how it can force people to do its bidding, when we actually encourage the free, voluntary exchange of goods and services and a smaller government, we naturally have the lowest tax rates. When we shift over into Bidenville and the China model and we're handing out money on race basis, when we're draining the economy of productive monies for fake infrastructure bills, when we've shut down business, 40% of small businesses for a year, we've given up our innate advantage. Free exchange, voluntary exchange of goods and services provides so much that the government wants to take over. When we function as a healthy republic, we have a naturally low tax rate, which invites investment in businesses from around the world. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Man, the learning continues. The Epoch Times, man, I should start asking them for money. Talk about them a lot. Epoch Times reports that the mothers of Tamir Rice, Breonna Taylor, are criticizing Black Lives Matter Incorporated, benefiting off the blood of our loved ones. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And they're destroying America in the same path. Burn cities, try to get cops killed, and get rich in the process. What was it, Billy Ayers? We're not supposed to talk about him anymore because he was, you know, Obama's mentor. He was a domestic terrorist. I think he still is, my judgment. What did he say? Guilty as hell, free as a bird, God bless America? Is that what he said? So the people whose kids' deaths empowered Patrice Collier's and her co-founders, trained Marxists, to become rich and powerful beyond belief are waking up to this. And I would just say to these, let's all recognize something. These are hurting families. I would love to speak with the Rice family and the Taylor family and to say, did you see Nancy Pelosi thank George Floyd for dying? She thanked him. Now, you want to know who's been at this game a lot longer than Patrice Collier, so the co-founder of Black Lives Matter Incorporated, who just bought this $1.4 million home in Topanga Canyon, Chuckie Schumer. Nancy Pelosi. AOC is late to the game, but she's really good at it. Barack Obama. Billion-dollar Obama. What did he do to reduce the deaths of African-Americans by African-Americans in this country? Nothing. Nothing. Greatest loss of his presidency was he was one guy who could have helped stop that, and he refused. He chose not to. And there are people saying, but wait, she's a Marxist. She's a trained Marxist. How can she go out and purchase these properties? Because she's a well-trained Marxist. She knows the joke is that no one gets rich under Marxism. The bosses get rich under Marxism. That's what a trained Marxist does. They know what's coming, ruin and destruction, but for other people, not them. That's the hilarious thing about Marxism. It's so hilarious. Well, I mean, in a really sick sense, it's hilarious. She's a trained Marxist making herself rich. Like, now, this is very comparable to this. The founder, co-founder of Black Lives Matter Incorporated, burning American cities, getting away with it, not a single question during the presidential debates about Black Lives Matter Incorporated. Republican politicians are scared to death to call Black Lives Matter Incorporated a terrorist group, which is what they are. And I've provided a formulation. It's real easy. Of course, Black Lives Matter. That's why we do not back a violent Marxist-led group of domestic terrorists called Black Lives Matter Incorporated. It's super easy. It's also a moral truth. Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter Incorporated is a terrorist group. Two things can be true at the same time. Under Biden's militarized installation of a presidency, the Black Lives Matter Incorporated flag will fly over our embassies and consulates. We just had Memorial Day, and I am just struck by this image in my mind. Just think of this. Think that you are a World War II veteran. Okay, and all the costs you paid, or you're the child or grandchild of a World War II veteran, and you're familiar with the costs they paid to stop the most sick rampage in the history of the world, perhaps, Nazism, fascism, you know, leftism. And you see this new flag. Just imagine being a World War II vet and seeing the BLM flag flying over our embassy, one of our embassies in France. When you'd watch your friends get killed there to raise the American and French flags over the U.S. embassy and over the French government buildings. As Rush himself says here, the U.S. flag has always been a symbol of freedom around the world.
Here's Robin, Champaign, Illinois. Great to have you on the program, sir.
Hi, Rush. I appreciate the chance to speak about honor flights. I had the chance to serve as a guardian in an honor flight from Illinois to the World War II Memorial in 2011 and again in 2012. We were counseled before the flights that the World War II veterans never really spoke about what they had experienced. And so we were told to expect some camaraderie, happiness, and tears as well. The sad thing is that in the last honor flight, 2012, both the man to my left and the man to my right have died. There would be no more opportunity for those guys. One of the guys that I was with had served with the group that liberated the Dachau concentration camp. And he told a story that he said he had never repeated, and that was the look, the feel, the smell of Dachau on the 20th of April, 1945. He said that he could walk through a park back home and catch a smell that would transport him back 65 years to that horror. And so his honor flight was a way to come to terms with something that it haunted him his whole life.
You know, the World War II memorial is an interesting thing. It was the last of the memorials to go up. Now, one of the reasons for that, you know, the Vietnam Vet Memorial was prominent. One of the reasons for the Vietnam Vet Memorial was that this country did not honor those people at the time. The World War II vets were heroes. They were honored. And please don't misunderstand me here. The returning Vietnam vets were spat upon, and no thanks to people like Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden. Hell, people from the 60s left that were traveled into Clinton's orb at that time. But the World War II vets, they had books written about them, The Greatest Generation, movies made about them, about their achievements. And yet they had not had a memorial. They had seen other memorials go up. So finally, there was a memorial to the World War II vets. And the reason it became important to them is simply the passage of time and the changing curriculum in history. And they became aware, the end of their lives, how few young people really knew what they'd done. The stakes that were faced, it just, like so much of the history curriculum, had been, in this case, not bastardized. They just took the occasion, the multiculturalists, that took the occasion of taking out whatever there was about World War II and, you know, supplementing, replacing some other cockamamie anti-Western civ course or curriculum for it. It wasn't that World War II was bastardized and taught as a bad thing. Not that. It was just that it was ignored. And the great achievements that occurred. Passage of time. It was, in their minds, forgotten. So that's why their memorial was important to them. And, of course, the memorial had been erected in their honor. And a lot of these World War II vets came back. I mean, they were not rich. They were not wealthy. Many were wounded. And it was the last thing they wanted to do in their lives was go see this memorial that was built in their honor. And this recent group told no by the current administration and the media trying to dump that off on the Republicans who tried to get the barricades removed.
Gosh, I remember that. And watching the World War II vets kick the barricades over, such a beautiful thing, right? How about if you kick the barricade over on big cell phone bills, right? When your next bill arrived, compare it to this. Pure Talk would be costing you just $30 per line for unlimited talk, texts, and 6 gigs of data. That's likely a big savings from your current bill. This is the company Rush recommended, and for good reason. They provide the same level of coverage as one of the big three carriers, but for less. When you switch to Pure Talk, you can keep your same phone number while saving all that money. Rush has all the details.
Hey, folks, there's one sure bet that you can make this year, and that is you're going to use your cell phone more than you did last year. That translates to bigger cell phone bills. You're going to be paying more for it, unless you are proactive and do something about that. This is why so many people in this audience are switching their cell phone service from one of the big providers to Pure Talk. Pure Talk offers you unlimited talk, unlimited text, and 6 gigs of data for just $30 a month. And if you go over on data, they don't charge you for it. They don't charge you if you go over your 6 gigs of data. Now, you compare that monthly price, $30 a month, to your current cell phone bill. Just compare it. Your current cell phone bill, I mean, I'd say make a guess, but $75, $80, depending on how many lines and phones you have. Don't know what it is, but $30 a month for unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data. Now, here's the real icing on the cake. Pure Talk uses the same cell phone towers as one of the biggest cell phone service providers in America. They focus on providing great service and support with every Pure Talk employee located in the U.S. From your cell phone, do this. Dial #250 and say Pure Talk. Get started. You'll save 50% off your first month. That's #250 and say Pure Talk. Just pick up your phone right now. #250 and say Pure Talk. Guess what? Somebody from there will answer and you're off and running.
One third. This is from YouGov, the economist YouGov. One third of Americans either believe it was a mistake or remain unsure about the U.S. involvement in World War II. This is as two fascist regimes, three if you count Stalin, were killing people on industrial levels. And they remain uncertain about this. One third. Meanwhile, it is, when I use the word literally, I mean, in a truthful sense, the thumb-sucking, basement-dwelling, kids ill in the head, members of Antifa, Black Lives Matter Incorporated, conned into that, who are trying to kill cops in Portland and Seattle and Los Angeles and San Diego, they will tell you they are fighting literal Nazis. And they will look you in the eye and they will tell you what we're doing is counter violence. It's not violence. It's counter violence. We're fighting literal Nazis. And blue checks on Twitter, journos, retweet comparisons of Antifa Black Bloc to 18 and 19 year old young men landing on the beaches on D-Day. And they find that comparison smart. What is it that the Democrats want? Angry over sexualized young people who do not understand their own history, who hate their own country. Conned into fighting against a thing that they can't win against because they're fighting against an emotion called hate. And hate means whatever the left says it means. Meanwhile, those we think of these World War II veterans, always think of them in our minds as 82 or 88 years old, but they were when they gave their lives to this country. Most of them are 17, 18-year-old kids, men. That's how we picture them, fighting for something that meant something. I said earlier about the U.S. flag. Russia's great regard for that. Rush reminded us what our flag means, as it always meant around the world.
I just watched something amazing. While all this was going on, there are massive protests at the Hong Kong airport. The Chi-Coms have been threatening to impose Chi-Com government policies on Hong Kong. And the people of Hong Kong don't want any part of it because they know it's going to add up to a massive loss of freedom and independence. I mean, Hong Kong, before the Chi-Coms regained control of it, Hong Kong was maybe one of the classic illustrations of raw capitalism that you could find. It worked, and it worked like a charm. And then the Brits, when they're getting rid of their empire, they're turning back over to the Chi-Coms. Now, watching the live footage, there are people protesting. They've shut down the Hong Kong airport. This new Hong Kong airport is huge, folks. And they've shut it down for 2 days in a row. Live footage of the police clashing with the protesters. And you know what the Hong Kong protesters are holding and waving around? The American flag. The protesters in Hong Kong protesting the incursion planned by the Chi-Coms are hoisting and waving proudly the American flag. There aren't any of them taking a knee. There aren't any of them scraping that flag along the floor. In Hong Kong today, the American flag is still the symbol of hope and freedom for oppressed people around the world. In Hong Kong, the American flag is part of the weaponry that the protesters are hoisting with great pride.
And at our consulates and embassies, courtesy of Joe Biden and the people running him, it's now the Black Lives Matter Incorporated flag that hangs over our embassies and consulates, and Republicans are trying to outlaw that. More as we continue the program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. There are so many things that only Rush could see. And next hour, we're going to hear Rush explain something that, in fact, only his huge brain would notice in a comparison between tennis and Trump derangement syndrome.
How many of you are aware of the controversy happened at the Women's U.S. Open tennis tournament over the weekend? Naomi Osaka. Are you aware that the controversy in that final is an exact microcosm for the Washington, D.C. establishment and Donald Trump? Folks, it is eerie. And I, of course, will explain it. If you're puzzled and scratching your head, what in the heck do I can they two have in common? It's all identical.
Now that's, come on, that's a great tease for next hour. So this young woman has decided to step out of a tennis tournament, the Grand Slam Championship. Or she's a Grand Slam champion. She's decided to withdraw from the French Open, and apparently this is related to mental health. And apparently we're to believe this is a controversial decision, a young woman deciding to care for herself. Already it's being made controversial because all things are political to the left. Reminder, RushLimbaugh.com continues to be the home for Rush 24-7, all of Rush's enduring wisdom. You'll hear that and more as we continue. Todd Herman, your guide host on the EIB Network. It is always an honor to be on the EIB Network. It has never stopped being surreal. It just isn't, and I don't think it ever will. Today is, in fact, the day the Lord has made, and these are the times in which God has decided we will live. Times such as these. Phone number for the program is 800-282-2882. We're going to get to a great story that Rush tells about Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas is back in the news because TMZ came up, and I did, I guess, maybe kind of a lighthearted kind of ambush interview with him. I think TMZ's getting better at this, of not just going out to just make Republicans and conservatives or constitutionalists, in the case of Justice Thomas, look stupid. And I think Republicans and constitutionalists are getting better at being, you know, okay in these circumstances. But this is an opportunity to expand on something a caller asked earlier. I made the remark that with Joe Biden and the people who run Biden, because I'm not convinced for 5 seconds that Biden is functionally president or head of anything other than the Biden crime family, and that's just by muscle memory. And I don't say that to be cruel. I truly don't. It's just muscle memory. Where's my 10%? Come on, man. That's just, his body remembers that. Caller asked about something I said, that we're giving up under Biden. They want to install this global minimum tax of 15% and pretend that corporations will pay it. And what I said is, this is a way to give up one of the prime advantages of our system when our system is run correctly. When our system is run correctly, we have a couple of things that make it very, very, a very good environment for business, for families, for kids, for fortunes, for freedom, for health, for all these things. They are a respect for God. I didn't say that people who don't believe in God can't be part of that. A respect for God. Why do I say that? Because respect for God is a reminder of something larger than ourselves. And it is also a recognition of some things are wrong, A, because they're biblically wrong, or B, because we feel they're wrong in our hearts. And I would argue that those things exist in our hearts by virtue of God. The morality that exists in our hearts is by virtue of either nature or God. Pick your choice. Right? Little kids know it's wrong when you steal from them, but why is it wrong? Right? There are people who will walk by a burning home. Someone's in it they don't know, and they're called to go rescue it, even if it's a child. Evolutionary theory wouldn't have you go rescue a child. The child doesn't contribute to the tribe, and yet we do this because we have this love and we have this compassion. So respect for God reminds us of something larger than ourselves. From there, then, respect for the humankind. And humankind is meant to be free. We know this in our hearts, right? None of us want to be confined. We have fear of being confined. Can you imagine being imprisoned? Particularly for something you didn't do, and how rage-making that would, you know, how rageful you'd feel about that. I would. So there's this respect for human freedom in our system properly run. That then gets down to sort of brass tacks of this argument about taxes. Properly run, we have a very low overhead society for government because it's very limited. It promotes our, it guards our borders. It engages in foreign transactions. It guards the courts to make sure that we are staying within constitutional provision. It does those things and only those things. That doesn't require a lot of money. It requires a lot of freedom. It requires a lot of morality, a lot of getting along with one another. Properly run, our Supreme Court shouldn't be that important. It shouldn't. It's very, you know, it's a very important job to be a member of the Supreme Court, but it should never be something that could break the country. We could have a Supreme Court say, yeah, the Second Amendment doesn't mean what it says. That's unmitigated power, but also the power to allow the destruction of the order that's been created in our country. the power to allow classrooms to teach that one race is inherently racist, therefore inherently bad. The power from the courtroom to say there's no such thing as men or women. The power from a courtroom to say, yeah, a fine is a tax and Washington, D.C. is a state. That's just disorder. Now, the tax rate goes up every time we empower government. The tax rate necessarily goes up. You can take it directly in things like Obamacare. Tax rates must go up. Social Security, tax rates must go up. We're going to hand this or this out money, or we need a Department of Education. It's not enough just to have them in the states. Now we need to have them around the country. Right? So now it needs to be, now that needs to be paid for. And now we've got federal government employees with their retirements and their vacations and we're paying for their kids' college, et cetera. And just continues to go up. A well-run constitutional republic has a low overhead system and a high freedom system and operates well. But the left is throwing disorder into everything, and all of a sudden we have a Supreme Court that's of vital importance for the very existence of the country, because the Supreme Court will eventually hear, if God forbid the Democrats get past this H.R. 1 disaster of a federal takeover of state elections. We've already seen that the Supreme Court doesn't want to enforce the Constitution in the way of elections. So Biden says a 15% minimum corporate tax rate. Corporations don't pay taxes. If that's installed, what would be the impetus for us to ever get back to economic liberties, to small government? That's the seriousness of installing this on a global basis. Now, thank goodness we've got Justice Thomas, truly a constitutionalist. And so Rush loved him, loved Clarence Thomas. And I do mean loved. Last week, Justice Thomas was approached by a TMZ reporter after leaving a restaurant, and Thomas poked a little fun at him. I think Rush would have loved this audio showing how down-to-earth and approachable he was. Here's a bit of how it sounded.
I'm just a civil servant.
I know Lance Eater retired. He got to be looking for some work a little bit. No,
but you're a funny guy. What do you do? You just sort of stand around and photobomb people?
No, I'm calling with TMZ.
I know you. I'm just giving you a hard
okay,
time.
Okay, man. We love your work, though, man.
You cracked me up. Did you go to NYU?
No, my sister did. Great school.
Was she at law school there?
No, she did. She did journalism also.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful school.
Yeah.
So you go around bothering people?
No. Actually, we find interesting people. What did you have to eat? I know you like steak dinner. No. Come on, man.
I love that man. I love that interaction. And by the way, reporter, you got filibustered, you got owned, and you got out charmed. Beautiful. The Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, he gets a bad rap by the drive-by, starting back during his confirmation all the way through today. And he doesn't ask a lot of questions on the bench, so they think he's either stupid or uninterested, neither of which could be further from the truth. And what they don't show, he's a regular down-to-earth guy you might find at Walmart or flying coach on a plane. Here's a little bit of Rush talking about our regular guy, Justice Clarence Thomas.
This is one of the greatest stories. Two kids from Maryland High School being recruited by Nebraska University. They fly out there. They go through the recruitment. They see the place. On their return flight home, in coach is a black man, huge Nebraska fan. And they talk to him throughout the flight. They have no idea they're talking to Justice Clarence Thomas. When they found out who it was, they went to their school, and they asked the school to have Clarence Thomas come give a speech, commencement speech, which he did. We have two sound bites here. It's Terrence Stevens, the high school graduate here, his reaction to meeting Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas.
I was amazed that this guy knew so much about us as football players and as people. And that was shocking in itself. So I felt honored to be known by somebody of his caliber and of his strength. But he was just a regular old guy. He was sitting in coach, which really shocked me.
Sitting in coach. Just a regular old guy. Here's Justice Thomas and a portion of his address to the students.
These young men had no idea who I was when I formed my first impressions of them. To them, I was just another stranger. They were wonderful ambassadors for your school and for their fellow students.
And that's Justice Thomas doing the commencement speech that these two kids wanted him to give after they met him on the plane. For most of the trip back to Maryland, They had no idea who they were talking to. But he knew that they were football players, that they had been recruited by Nebraska, that they were being looked at by Nebraska. And he's a huge Nebraska fan. This is why I knew. He's sitting back and coach. And you know what? Aside from what's obviously great about this story is, when the kids go back and ask the principal or whoever, get this guy to come speak, they did. That's what's amazing.
And Rush scrutinized people, like he scrutinized Justice Thomas. And the EIB network has taken it up, has always scrutinized each sponsor participating in this radio program. Oxford Gold Group met every criteria the EIB team was looking for in terms of customer service and making your experience with them a positive one. Buck Sexton is one of their clients, and he has this to say about them.
Hey, Buck Sexton here. Like you, I pay attention to our nation's economy and how it affects us. Last Friday's business headlines reported U.S. inflation surged upwards to 13-year highs. That's not good, but not totally unexpected. Our federal government has printed and put a lot of money into the economy, and inflation is a serious side effect. How do you protect yourself? By investing in gold and other precious metals. You can have real gold delivered privately and securely to your home, or have real gold put into your IRA or 401k. Call the Oxford Gold Group at 833-404-GOLD. The Oxford Gold Group will teach you everything you want to know about owning real gold, and it's a lot easier than you'd think. This is one of a few select sponsors the EIB has embraced in the past 3 months because they've passed all tests and safeguards that Rush taught us to pay attention to. Excellent customer service, providing something of real value to you, and respecting this audience and program's longstanding relationship. Call the Oxford Gold Group now at 833-404-GOLD to get your free precious metals investment guide. The Oxford Gold Group is here to help you protect your savings and retirement from the unknown. Call them now, 833-404-GOLD. Get gold you can hold from the Oxford Gold Group, 833-404-GOLD. Now, Todd, back to you, and thank you.
Yep, thank you, Buck. Naomi Osaka is back in the news. She's going to drop, or has dropped out of the French Open. You're going to hear why Rush was the greatest brain in talk radio as we continue the program, as he compares tennis to politics, and you won't believe how spot on it is. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Reminder that I know you're all going to want to buy Tony Fauci's book. He talks about his life theory, his life philosophy. Well, what I say is get close to power. I talk to young people that, you can go, you know, do things that are right with God or with your conscience and stuff. And what I say is really just cozy up to power, particularly inarticulate people. Like, for instance, I won't use her full name, but I will use her initials, HRC. Really helpful to my career because I cozied up to her and said nice things about her. So part of my philosophy of life is doing that. And then never disclose your financials. If you work for government, get into a position where you can make money on the side, but you don't have to disclose it. And that takes some work, but it's doable if you find the right gig. That's sort of part of my philosophy of life, of the long grift. Don't go for the short grift, kids. The short grift is easy. Go for the long grift. Yeah, the book is called Expect the Unexpected, apparently. Tony Fauci. Speaking of that, let's talk to Toby in Eastern North Carolina. Toby, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Welcome, Toby.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Doing great. Glad you called. What's on your mind, sir?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, sir. So, I've just been digging into this COVID for a number of, obviously, months and weeks, and what concerns me is I don't hear on any of the networks, Fox, of course, any of the mainstream, of the, and I will lead it off of, you know, what would have been the motive for introducing something like this, which I wholly believe this wasn't just it escaped the lab.
So you think China introduced the virus to the world?
Oh, hands down, without a doubt. And I think it's going to come out, and it's just a matter of time. But when I look at the motive and I start piecing together what was going on, and I really start digging into the, you know, where were we during the Trump trade war timeline? And it's fascinating because during this time, I've read articles from, you know, the summer of 19 going into the, you know, December when there's kind of the deal, and and how Trump's negotiators, Kudlow, Navarro, how tight and how the Chinese cannot manipulate and turn these guys on each other, which I guess historically they've been able to do in previous administrations. And I'll back this up. When I watched a wonderful video on Summer Davos that's held in China since 2007. Well, the July of 19, I watched an economic forum of five, six folks, and two Chinese communists, two American businessmen, and a Chinese economist that works in London. Very, very good hour and a half talk show, and with a huge audience. And I was just reading the body language of everyone and, of course, what they're saying. But you could just tell that in the summer of 19, China is really, really getting it stuck to them by the Trump trade wars. And even seeing on, like, mainstream TV shows of CNN and of going into cities of, you know, industrial cities of China that are literally just ghost towns. And because the supply chain is just getting wrecked with the tariffs and so on and so forth. And I start sitting and looking and reading articles about this, and I'm like, I'm telling you, they could not take four more years of President Trump and these policies. He had to go. And, you know, when I then start looking at the ties, and if your audience hasn't read it, you have to read Klaus Schwab's Great Reset, the chairman –
yeah.
Founded the WEF in 1971. It is the classic anti-capitalist flip the head on its the world on its head,
right?
Because of COVID,
and
they
Toby,
are just, it is the global socialist elite, and it's not unbelievable, and it's right there.
Right, we're not far off, you and I, on this. That I believe that the Great Reset, their great trick was pretending it was on the way. I will make the case anywhere, any time, that the Great Reset began in March of last year. And it began with, let's let the felons out, but let's lock up the business owners. Let's block kids from going to school, but let's keep the abortion clinics open. Let's shut down Ma and Pa hardware stores, but let's let Lowe's operate. Let's pretend masks work when they don't. Let's pretend this virus is Captain Trips when it's not. The thing from Stephen King's book, and actually Alex Berenson thought of that comparison. But here's my question. Why do this with a virus that is no more deadly for most people than a flu? They didn't have to, because the Mockingbird media types were so anxious to jump on anything that could hurt the president that they would jump all over this. And Fauci's so anxious for bureaucratic power. And, you know, he knows his role is to help get rid of Trump. He's a swamp creature from way back. So what I'm saying is, I do not believe this was a bioweapon unless it's a multi-stage bioweapon. I think China looked at this and said, why don't we just manipulate the situation? This thing is out there. Why don't we just allow some videos to leak of people in China falling over on the streets? And why are we trying to contain this, right? Why don't we release these videos of, oh my gosh, everyone's dying. This is the worst thing in the world. We've got to shut down the global economy, knowing that they're a dictatorship. They can reopen their economy whenever they want. They shut down things whenever they want. I think that's what they released. I think they released the panic. I think they released the lies that it's this thing that's like the walking dead. You know, Toby, that's what I think they released. I think it came from the lab in China. I believe that for over a year. But do you see what I'm saying? That what they actually loosed on the world was this panic, and to feed the Mockingbird media the ability to say, lock it all down. And yes, of course, to get rid of Trump.
Absolutely. But I'll take it a step further. I mean, I don't think anybody out there is denying that, you know, COVID-19 isn't real. Obviously, it is. It's taken advantage of.
Yeah, it's real.
Folks with pneumonia, with diabetic,
right,
overweight, so on and so forth. But if you go back, and again, this is kind of really why I called, is you don't hear anything about the military world games of 2019. And where were they held? Wuhan, China, 18 to 27 October, over 140 nations, 9,300 plus troops around the world. That, I believe, is where, and there's fascinating articles on it. All you got to do is Google and dig, and it's there for you. It's for the taking. And what better venue to spread this thing and the timing works out impeccable. I went to a conference in Vegas in early December of 19, and the
you know what
that I went to about 2 weeks later. One of them, a very good friend of mine, deathly sick.
Yeah.
Thought he had his own
I promise I'm not cutting you off. I'm just looking at a clock going tick, tick, tick. I've talked to people who got sick with this stuff. They think early 2020, some of them late 2019. The virus has been in our world a long time. I think China released the panic. I think the Mockingbird media wanted Orange Man bad gone. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. I don't know if you're following this, the situation with a young woman named Naomi Osaka, but she's decided to not participate in the French Open. And so she's sort of an athlete that sees her work on the court to speak enough, right? She doesn't apparently go out and thrust her opinion on things societal and political into the world. And therefore, the press has not been all that kind to her. And so she finds reasons sometimes to not participate in things, like in this case, mental health reasons in the French Open. She's not going to participate. And so this admission of hers over the weekend of contending with mental health issues since 2018, and she's going to take time away from the sport, is probably going to lead to a bunch of groups speaking out for her, which she can do on her own but chooses not to, and against her. So, you know, she's a serious player. She beat Serena Williams as the most popular, probably most celebrated player on the women's professional tennis circuit. And press was brutal to her. And likely so were other people. Now, why mention this on Rush's program? Because Rush spoke about her and this back in 2018. And only the Maha's intelligence could spot this incredible comparison. Serena Williams, Hillary Clinton, Naomi Osaka, and Donald Trump. Listen.
How many of you are aware of the controversy happened at the Women's U.S. Open tennis tournament over the weekend, Naomi Osaka? Are you aware that the controversy in that final is an exact microcosm for the Washington, D.C. establishment and Donald Trump? Folks, it is eerie. And I, of course, will explain it. If you're puzzled and scratching your head, what in the heck can they two have in common? It's all identical. The comparisons between Serena Williams and Hillary Clinton and Naomi Osaka and Donald Trump are just stunning if you stop to think about it, and if you know what happened. I don't know how many of you paid any attention to what happened in the U.S. Open, but Serena Williams melted down. She got swamped. She lost in two sets. She was never in the match. She got skunked by a 20-year-old upstart who, interestingly, is also a minority female. She's Japanese. Spent some time growing up in America, but her heroine, her whole life has been Serena Williams, and her dream was to play in the U.S. Open Finals against Serena Williams, and it happened, and she beat Serena Williams, and they made her cry. They made her feel like excrement for daring to beat Serena Williams. Serena Williams was left to complain that the judges were being unfair, the referees were unfair. She threw her racket in disgust after losing a point, started shouting that she's never cheated, that she's honest, that she's got a daughter now, she's trying to be an excellent role model, demanding that the referee owe her an apology. And the tennis elite circling the wagons around her, thinking the referee blew it, they had no problem booing the winner at the U.S. Open. They booed the winner. I'm telling you, folks, the comparisons are many. That U.S. Open women's tennis final, a microcosm for how Trump is treated by the elites in Washington. Same thing. How all of us are treated, in fact. Expected to lose. Expected to be second or third class. Supposed to apologize for winning and then reject the victory and give it back. Make allegations that our victory was tainted by cheating that benefited us. A lot of people are saying, well, Rush, you're missing the point on this. It's because of race. It's not race, because Naomi Osaka, I think, is a woman of color as well. She's Japanese, Haitian. It's not race, folks. This is elitism. This is pure we're better than you. We are in an upper class and you're not. That's what this is. Now, Serena Williams is one of the chosen beneficiaries of the elite's affection, because she does check off all the boxes. But they're also legitimately impressed with her talent, but that's not the primary thing. I just don't think race is the primary predominant factor here in what happened. I think the expectation that she is chosen, she is the perennial representative of leaders and of winners, and that this defeat of hers was a personal affront to the elites, not just to her. How dare that other girl win? They made that other girl feel like crap. When she was given the trophy, when she was awarded the trophy, she was in tears and she did apologize. She apologized for causing all of this that upset Serena Williams. And Serena Williams sat there and nodded as though that's exactly how this young upstart ought to behave. I don't doubt there's a lot of sympathy for Serena Williams because of her race, but this is elitism, folks. It's more about being an accepted insider and losing to some exciting new outsider that drove them nuts. Here is the award ceremony. Just to tell you about this, because this I'm telling you that the similarities are striking. At the award ceremony, the winner, 20-year-old winner, Naomi Osaka, covered her face with her visor and cried. The crowd booed her. The president, the chairman of the United States Tennis Association, a woman named Katrina Adams, opened the award ceremony by criticizing the winner and speaking longingly of the loser. The chairman and president of the USTA actually said, while the winner is there holding her trophy, perhaps it's not the finish we were looking for today, but Serena, you are a champion of all champions. I'm sorry, perhaps this is not the finish we were looking for today, but Hillary, you are the women of all women. You're the champion of all champions. And then the president of the United States Tennis Association turned and addressed the crowd and said, this mama, meaning Serena Williams, this mama is a role model and respected by all. This role model had just embarrassed herself with numerous meltdowns, demanding apologies, accusing the referee of cheating her, not being fair and all this. It's classic. There are no manners anywhere. There is not a single institution, it seems, that we can turn to and rely on for just common decency. And I'll tell you why. It's because every damn thing in life that the left has touched has been politicized by its ideology, liberalism. How dare they? This young woman, this was her dream to play against the best and win. And she wanted the respect and admiration of Serena Williams. How many of you can relate to this in whatever you've chosen to do in your life? I sure can.
I can't imagine being a judge awarding to a young woman who has dedicated her life to a career in professional sports the sacrifices people make to choose to be at the top of anything. It's remarkable. Sacrifices in diet, sacrifices in the time in your life, sacrifices in terms of gaining deep friendships, sacrifices with family, sacrifices with educational opportunities, albeit you can gain educational opportunities by being in life. You don't need to be in school to get educational opportunities. But to turn that against this young woman, because she had the audacity to beat the establishment. You see what Rush is saying there? Now, let's go back and let's consider some of the calls that we had today, talking about the effort to get rid of Donald Trump at all costs. And this judge and this tennis, this leader in this tennis organization, the cost was what? This young woman's mental health? What was the cost to get rid of Trump? To cancel the election? The elites must maintain their elitism, even if it's just emotional. I don't think they went through the thinking of, hey, let's destroy this young woman's state of mind and her mental health and let's attack her. I think they just responded emotionally. I don't even think they can explain why. It's emotional. In D.C., the swamp can absolutely explain why. Trump is not controllable. He's not sellable. He's not predictable. He's not someone that we can constantly con into or threaten into doing our will. You think they didn't go to Trump and say, hey, look, they've got Russia on you. You've got to fade into the background. Let Mike Pence run things. We're going to protect you. But if you don't, you're going to end up in a prison cell. Your family's going to end up in a prison cell. They've got you on this. Doesn't matter if you did it or not. Any other president would have folded. Any other one. Right? And I hope that this young woman will continue to stand by her guns and continue to be herself. I don't even know what she thinks of politics or anything else. I just can't stand elitism. We'll come back on the EIB Network. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Just want to give you a quick update from the news. White House has confirmed that there's been a cyber attack on U.S. meat supplier, one of the largest, that would put that counts during Biden's administration, the second major industry to suffer a cyber attack during his time behind this militarized installation. Installation in the White House, right? So let's just keep track on this. So we need a high note, and we do. EIB high note today is about a grandson who helped lift his grandfather's spirits in more ways than one. So there's an 80-year-old, Malcolm Hansen, and he's feeling depressed after he put his wife of 57 years into a care home due to Alzheimer's disease. So his 12-year-old grandson, Harrison Gurney, set out to fulfill his lifelong dream, the chance to fly in a Spitfire, the most famous plane of World War II. And Hansen loved vintage aircraft ever since he witnessed a dogfight above him in 1945 in London.
Spitfire pilot was chasing the enemy plane in a very tight circle. I felt very proud that somebody was looking after us.
So his grandson took to writing letters to airfields and private Spitfire owners all across the UK. And he also did extra chores to save up money for the surprise. And so these letters moved the staff at Goodwood Aerodrome in West Sussex, and they agreed to help. Plus, they threw in a surprise of their own, allowing both grandpa and grandson to take to the skies at the same time, waving at each other from separate aircraft. If you want to see it, you can see the video of the duo flying over at rushlimbaugh.com. It's EIB's high note for the day. Ed in Lexington, South Carolina. Bring us back down to earth. Ed, welcome to the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Glad you called, Ed. Hi.
Thank you, Todd. I just wanted to dovetail a little bit about with what you were speaking about with the other caller. We were, my wife and I, along with a team of four other people, were in Wuhan, China, when the leak happened. And we were right in the middle of, in fact, we were there right at the beginning of the opening ceremonies of the Military Olympics. Todd, it was traced by several people, including Scientific American and the Five Eyes, the intelligence services of the English-speaking countries of the world, that it all came down to that one laboratory and one lab worker. I think her name was Suhi or something like that. Anyway, the problem was she then allowed her boyfriend, her live-in boyfriend, to sell the very bats that she'd been working on and experimenting with on the wet market. And that's where it came from. It was a stupid move. She never should have done it. But that's where it happened. Now, where the government culpability comes in is that they knew that they had this potential plague on their hands, and they allowed people who were sick to meet together in the Chinese New Year celebrations, and then they allowed them to take it back to places where they were working as domestics in other situations in Europe, particularly Italy. So that's where the spread came from. If the government's culpable, it's over the New Year's meetings. It's not over the release of the virus per se.
Well, I've never heard the theory of the young woman allowing her boyfriend to sell the bats. I've seen the theory of the young woman becoming sick and then exiting the lab. But I would add this: if there was gain of function research on this. And gain of function means it can mean any sort of function, but it means making the virus more virulent. It could be more deadly. It could be more contagious. It could be longer lasting. It could be a carrier of other things. Gain of function research is a form of weaponizing. And the people like Fauci, who's writing a book on his life philosophy, I call it the long grift. They will defend gain of function research saying, well, we need to know what would happen if. Well, if doesn't mean you create it. So I would add, you know, Ed, only to your comment said, if it's gain of function, if the U.S. paid for that, if that gain of function added anything to the virulence of this virus, which thank God for most of us is less deadly than the common flu, then they also add to that culpability. Fascinating story, Ed. What a time in history to have been in Wuhan during that. Appreciate you calling Rush's show. We'll wrap up the program when we come back for the day. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. So much to get to tomorrow on the EIB Network. I'm sure we'll dig into, that's an unintended pun, the second cyber attack against a backbone of the U.S. economy. This is the meat supply of the United States, so prices are going to go up. As you see, the AP has been pretending that the increase in gas prices is not related to Biden. They actually put out a fact check. Just claiming, oh, everyone's surprised that people want to drive again. The AP put out that fact check. I want to remind some people of something, well, just everybody, that very, very, very early on in the travels around COVID-19, SARS-CoV-2, one guy took a heck of a lot of heat for saying what has come to be true. Number one, President Trump predicted the death rate for the COVID flu would be below 1% or below, and he was proven right. He said it came from China in the lab, and this is looking to be right. But Rush also said so much about this. He took such heat for saying that this would turn out to be, right, for most people, like a common flu, and consequently it was. It certainly took lives. All lives of human life is tragic in my mind, in my estimation. That God wants us to live as long as we can, to learn as much as we can, to change as many hearts as we can, to draw as many people to him as we can, and as Rush did, particularly towards the end of his life. But remember what this show meant for truth at a time when truth was being attacked. Remember what EIB meant and means. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network.